is a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it!
Hello, good evening, Aston Villa fans, and welcome to the Villa Threader podcast. I am your host, Chad Williams. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, X, and Instagram. Please subscribe on YouTube. Give me a follow on all socials, including TikTok. Follow me on Spotify, up on Amazon Music. Smash the likes on this video. Let's spread awareness of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. On this evening's episode, I'm joined by my special guest, Hannah Gowan, who is from the UTD Fan Channel. She is a fan of this on Sky Sports and a BBC fan writer. I always enjoy talking to Hannah on the show. She also does a great job as a fan writer and representing our football club. This is the Aston Villa Fans Forum. This is the football phone. It's time to have your say, Aston Villa fans. And going into the international break, we are in a good place. Also, Aston Villa get a 2-week break. This gives Unai Emery and the players time to reset and regroup. And there's a lot more confidence in the dressing room with the return of the captain, John McGinn, and Yuri Tielemans. There is a Europa League trophy up for grabs and Champions League football as well. Great to have the show, Hannah. How are you?
Thanks, Chad. Glad to be here. I'm doing well. I'm actually enjoying the international break because I think we've had quite an intense few months, haven't we, of following Villa and lots of games, lots of not so good games. So I think we've had a couple of good ones now and we get a nice break, a nice separation from football for a bit. And then I think ready for the last push when we come back in a couple of weeks' time.
That's going to get the remaining running. And like I said at the top of the show, we're in a good place. We're 1 point behind Man United. We just need to keep the momentum going and see where it takes us, get a run together. A bit like what we did at the start of the season. Try and do that towards the end of the season.
I think Villa teams under Emery, we've always seemed to have a good end to the season as well. So I would hope that we can replicate that. And like you say, we've had these two sort of dips and I don't really see us going back to how bad it was at one point. I think we should now have sort of at least levelled off, but if not, get better for the final running. Like you say, with John McGinn coming back and Tielemans as well, it gives us a big boost. So I'm feeling very confident and optimistic for the final seven games in the Premier League.
So I'll ask you this question, Hannah. So how much of a boost is it having John McGinn and Yuri Tielemans back in the team?
It's massive for us. There's no denying that it was pretty obvious we were missing something probably since the start of January, around the time that the injuries started to creep in. And I saw a stat, it might have been from ABFC Stato, I think with John McGinn in the team, or when he starts, with our win percentage is 80%+. So McGinn is an important cog to the machine. He is not only the captain, but although he's not the most glamorous player, he is the machine and the heart of this team, isn't he? So he's already contributed goals since he returned, and goals was something we were really missing for the last couple of months. So it's huge for us. And Tielemans is also a unique proposition for this team. The vision he has and the way he drives us forward, again, is quite unique. We have benefited from Onana staying fit for a little while. And as much as he has been brilliant, I think he is a very different player. What we've needed is the likes of Tielemans who can find a cut-through ball or really forward. We've had a lot of sideways backwards, haven't we? So he's massive for us. And I think everyone would have recognised that we were missing something while we're injured. So it's great to have them back now.
So in John McGinn, you've got that leadership on the pitch. When I watched that West Ham game, he galvanizes the other players. It's like the other players, in the likes of Sancho, they look up to John McGinn. He's a good role model. And it all seems to like the confidence. It's pretty massive there. It's given everyone a real lift.
Definitely. The team, I don't think the team ever were really struggling for confidence, because I'd like to think that the manager instills a good culture, but it was clear that there was something not quite right. And it's nice even for players like Sancho, who's obviously on loan, has had quite an interesting career, probably a relatively big name signing, big wages. For someone like him, who's quite a flashy player, I would say, and the humble John McGinn, the level of respect from Sancho, I think, just proves that, you know, you don't need to be a multi-million pound player with 300 grand a week wages, you know, playing in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. If you're a hard-working skipper who gets good morale in the dressing room, works hard and sets a good example, your teammates are going to respect you. So I think it's actually a great example of why John McGinn is the captain.
So we've got Josh on the line. So we can bring Josh in. Hi, Josh.
How are you doing, Chad? You okay?
Yeah, good to have the show again, mate.
Thank you very much. Hannah, you okay?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
All good, thank you.
So Josh was talking about, it's a big boost having John McGinn and Youri Tielemans. How much of a big boost is it to both of these players fit?
I think to have both of them back at around about the same time, it showed that in the games that we lost and drew, which were games that were potentially could have been wins, it showed how much we missed them in the midfield in those games. So I think having them back at the same time is a massive boost for the club. But it also showed in the previous two games against Lille, and especially against West Ham on the weekend.
Yeah, because the Youri Tielemans, it gives us that structure. It's a very calm influence on the team. It gives that control that we need. The Youri Tielemans on the pitch, he controls the games. And it gives that more creativity, which we have been lacking, I think.
Yeah, and I think you've actually just mentioned it there in the question chat. I think what Tielemans does in the midfield is really hard work. He kind of almost like, if you like, he almost marshals the midfield. And if McGinn wanders forward, which he often does, Tielemans is always back there helping out, tracking back with the defenders.
He suits the way we play. With that double pivot, we get that back, and it suits it like Emery's still on the plate, and to show us how much he really missed it. He's a quality player.
Absolutely. No, absolutely, you're right there, Chad. It definitely suits the style of player that Unai Emery's after. I mean, going back to the Lille game, but it might have even been the West Ham game, I can't remember which game it was, where McGinn came on and went for that crunching tackle in about 5 minutes of coming on. Oh, no, not with your new knee, not with your new knee. Thinking, oh, God, I hope he's not injured himself.
You can jump McGinn. She's got to get stuck in. She's got that real raw passion. Not just for Aston Villa, but
for Scotland as well.
Scotland in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you was to give me a whole midfield of John McGinn players, it would be a brilliant midfield. Everyone would be getting stuck in. Yeah. I just like the way him, Tielemans, and unfortunately, although he's out injured, Kamara at the moment, I just like the way them three go about their business in the middle of the field and really help us out in key moments.
And Harder, a John McGinn sort of player, can get in most teams. Most managers love his work ethic.
Yeah.
I think it's the point I made earlier around he's not a flashy player, is he? He's not a luxury player. But I still think a lot of managers in the Premier League, maybe not Pep Guardiola or Mikel Arteta, but honestly, so many managers will look at John McGinn and they won't know how to coach against him because he's pretty uncoachable. And they'll love, the work, right? You know, when McGinn's on the pitch, even if he does sometimes have slightly...
Odd game where he's a bit hot or not so good, but then next game...
He works hard.
Brilliant, yeah.
He'll work hard. You know, his shoulders don't drop, his head doesn't drop. He will still go for that crunching tackle, like you say, Josh. He'll put his body on the line. That's why, for me, he is my favourite player I've ever seen at Villa.
Yeah, and I think you know which tackle I'm on about where he crunches against the ball. I'm like, oh, no.
He's
right in front of me. but no, you're right, Hannah. I think he's one of my all-time favourite midfielders I've ever seen at the Villa. Dare I say, I think we're still lucky to have him because for £2.5 million,
I agree.
If someone would say 7-8 years ago, you'll pay £2.5 million for a player and it'll turn out to be one of your best midfielders, we'd have all laughed. And until we've seen him play, we was like, actually, no. He is £2.5 million. He has turned out to be one of our better midfielders and he just does not give up. It's like watching a ball. It's like watching a ball terrier destroy one of its toys. It's just non-stop until it's finished with it.
And he puts some of our other recruitment to shame, really, if you think about it. We've not particularly recruited well, I would say, for the last few years. And you look back at a £2.5 million Steve Bruce deal and you think probably the best business we've done in the last decade, in my opinion. I think
it's
I agree with you.
Bargain of the century.
Yeah.
And John McGinn, he always steps it up. Even the big moments, the team need the most. Look, he's only scored the Europa League. He scored some important goals. To me, John McGinn, he's already an Aston Villa legend, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's players like him these days are hard to come by because I think you may have just mentioned it just before I came into the stream, Hannah. A lot of players now, they're all, if we can say it, pretty boys. They don't get stuck in. They want to play tippy-tappy, tic-tac-toe football. And McGinn isn't that sort of player. He's full of grit, determination and just whatever on earth he's built out of, because I still don't know to this day.
Granite, or concrete, whichever you want to pick.
I'm going to the next talking point.
Go for it.
We're going to talk about the redevelopment work in the North Stand. So, what are your thoughts about that? It's starting actually this week.
I'm looking forward to it personally. Whether or not they have to shut the stand to complete the work, I don't know. I hope they don't, because that will be a shame if we do have to lose one of the stands for part of the season. If they can do what Liverpool did, where they kept it open, did the work outside and then finished it that way, great. But I just think it's something that Villa have needed for a while. And I also think with the opening of the new warehouse as well, which, if you've not yet been in there pre-game, Chad,
it's a great venue. I'm going to go in there because I met so many friends there.
Yeah.
Before kickoff, and for me, not just the match day experience, for me, it's a social experience as well.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there's more often than not, you'll probably get a chance to meet Alan McInally at some point in there, or whoever they're talking to on stage. But no, it is good. They have the Villa band on, and I think these are the sorts of things we've been lacking for a couple of years at the Villa. But I'm really looking forward to bring the revenue in as well.
I think revenue is really important.
Yeah, really looking forward to seeing how the North Stand's going to look.
Yeah, I think those are the places that we need to be making the money. Let's not be putting the ticket prices up by £10 for
Bologna. Oh, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
I know. I think
that's a whole different podcast.
We're all a bit grumpy about it. And yes, we'll pay. I've bought my ticket. I'm going to go. But these are the places we should be investing, bringing the new revenue streams in. It's on tap potential. The match day for so many isn't the 90 minutes. I mean, for some of us it is. But for so many, they do want a pint after the game. They do want to stay. Can we get live music in that goes into the night? People will stay there. People will love it. So that is the place that we need to be making the money and really capitalising on that. And I do hope that more around the North Stand makes it a destination. Because at the minute, it does look really nice. Yep. I like what they've done with it. And I think there's the potential for it to be so much more.
No, so we're going to get completed for the Euros, because Villa Park is going to be the venue in Euro 28.
Yeah, which would be interesting. And I think going back to your point there, Hannah, you are right. We do seem to be paying a lot of money for the tickets. I do think there is better ways of bringing in revenues. I mean, the warehouse, great. If they get bands on in there, brilliant. But if revenue streams are the only way we're going to cope with the big teams, it's the only way we'll be able to do it. And unfortunately, you know, like you said, I've paid my ticket for Bologna. I'm still not going to go. I'm still going to enjoy the football. Okay. But like you said, for many, it's not just going to the football. It's a day out. Especially, you know, younger kids want something from the shop as well.
Yeah.
That's nearly...
Well, Josh, where are you going to stay? At the end of the game, say, for example, don't go home straight away. Like, enjoy the full experience.
I've done that a couple of times. No, you are right there, I have. I do think staying to the end of the game is important. But I think price instruction needs to be looked at.
Yep. Yeah, I agree, mate. Yep. They're also going to be completed. The Bologna game. It's completed and all done the first phase of construction. And the concourses are going to remove the remainder of the season. So it might cause slight disruption.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that, Josh, about the North Stand? Remove the concourses?
That's going to please a lot of people, isn't it? Brilliant. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And also the 50,000 to increase the capacity.
Yeah.
So obviously then there'll be a bigger weight. The season ticket weight.
As it is. I think that's important, more capacity, because it'll take some of the people that are on the waiting list off it. But you've also got to look, there's going to be an extra 8,000 people getting out of the ground. It's a pain in the backside as it is to get away from the ground after the games. And it's also, I think, Witten and Aston Station really need an overhaul as well.
Well, Josh, thank you for your time, Josh. It's always run out, mate, but thank you for taking part.
No problem, Chad. Always a pleasure, mate. Hannah, nice to meet you.
Thanks, Josh.
We'll get the next guy. We've got Rob Warner. He's on the line next. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Hi, everyone. How's it going? Chad, Hannah, nice to see you again.
Well, I'm pleased to have you on the show.
My pleasure to be here. Aston Villa royalty right here on the podcast. So, yeah, the pleasure's all mine. I apologise for any background noise. I've got my bulldog snoring away behind me.
It's okay. What's your dog's name?
Buster. I wanted to call him Dennis after Dennis Mortimer, but the kids wanted to call him Buster, so we ended up stuck.
Your middle name, Rob.
Yeah, that's what he's called from now on. I like it. Yeah, Buster Dennis Warner.
So, Rob, we're going to talk about it's been 30 years this week since we won the League Cup. So, Rob, do you remember that day very well?
Is that why you've waited to get me on? Get the old guy on and he'll
tell us. Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for you.
I do remember it, actually. I remember it really fondly, partly for the run itself to actually get into the final. Obviously, the whole journey to get into the final was amazing. But what was extra special to me was my dad had been a season ticket holder most of his life. His parents had been season ticket holders before that. And he'd never been to see Villa at a Wembley final. He didn't have a season ticket at that point. I did. And so I had a ticket for the final, and I actually won a competition to win a ticket. So I gave him the ticket for the final. So he wasn't sitting with us, but I met up with him outside the stadium afterwards, and he was crying his eyes out. He was so happy.
I bet it's been amazing feeling. Me and Hannah, we haven't seen that, obviously, and hopefully... But see it in the Europa League, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the dream, isn't it? It's probably actually cheaper to get to Istanbul than it is to get to London on the train as well. Yeah. So there should be quite a few Villa fans there. But yeah, the feeling of seeing the team lift up a trophy is something else, and it's and even I'm guilty now of, you know, we'll play in the early rounds of the cup, and I'm not that bothered, really. The European competition's different, but not fussed if we get knocked out of the League Cup. We've got to finish in the top four if we want to keep growing as a club. But I think the reality is, and we saw it with Palace fans last season, although they're playing on a different level to us, you know, it's winning a trophy means everything. Yeah. That's what you're in it for. You know, it's great to finish fourth, but you don't get
Look, memories are important.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's it. Is, you know, we've had a few important games, usually around staying up or getting promoted, probably more than we've had around actually winning a trophy. I mean, the playoff final was incredible. By all accounts, it was incredible. Sadly, I was on a flight, so I missed it. Rub it in. Yeah, I was on a flight to New York, so I got off the plane at JFK and switched my phone on and was like desperately. Well, as soon as I got a signal, I got a billion text messages. but yeah, so I didn't even get the chance to enjoy that, at least not in the moment. And so yeah, it was, you know, I think having that moment when the trophy goes up, it does make has a massive impact, makes a massive difference.
And I went to Villa Park in the West Ham game. He's not to give the legends recognition for what they've done. It's a real nice touch. Getting the legends to come out like the 30 years. For that as well.
It's not. I think on the one hand, it's really nice that we're able to give them the recognition. And for me personally, a really important memory. But on the other hand, it's a bit sad that we haven't won a trophy for 30 years.
It's too long to...
Yeah, it's almost embarrassing getting them out to give them a round of applause. You know, when we were doing when the club was doing the badge redesign, and I got invited into one of the early supporter consultations, and I was like, I don't want the star in the badge because it suggests we're never going to win another one. You want it above the badge so it can be supplemented. If it's in the badge, it's like a permanent fixture.
What can they about? The likes of Newcastle, they ended their trophy droughts last season. So, we're on the conveyor belt. With those many teams.
We're next. It's got to be.
Hopefully, Hopefully, we do seem to be 12 months behind them, don't we, Hannah? I think in terms of you look at what they did, and then we seem to have done similar a year after.
Yeah, I my partner, my boyfriend, is a Newcastle fan, so I watch a lot of Newcastle, and I do feel that we're kind of similar clubs, and we definitely need our moment now because it's really annoying me that they've won a trophy and we haven't. But I had a similar feeling, Rob, watching them walk around. It was pre my lifetime, unfortunately, that they won. And obviously, it's brilliant what they achieved. But
yeah, Hannah, I bet it was interesting in your house that when your boyfriend could be a Newcastle fan.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting on a
match. Any arguments?
No, we just have to not talk about it, Chad, otherwise it would get nasty. but yeah, watching the 96 team interact with some of our players that were doing like the halftime warm-up, I did think, are our current squad looking at them thinking, wow, we look up to these players, or are they thinking, God, look at this lot worshipping players from 30 years ago that won one trophy? So I did have a bit of that reflection of like, this is brilliant and it's in our history and it's important to celebrate it. But God, this group here need to be the ones that we're applauding and that we're looking back in 5 years' time and thinking that's the squad that won us a European trophy.
Yeah, and I think you could comfortably, if you were looking at both sets of players, you'd be interesting as to if you were making a combined team out of today's 11 and the 11 players that played in that final. I don't know how many of the 96 team would actually make it into that team, if I'm being honest. You know, I think it's because of the way he left, it's easy to underestimate just how good Dwight York was, to be honest. They really, talent. Savo, yeah, I mean, incredible, but also incredibly frustrating. Savo, and I remember the excitement of when he signed and when he played for Belgrade. He was famous for wearing a bandana. And so he came to Villa and everyone was like, oh, he's going to wear a bandana on the pitch in the Premier League. This is going to be crazy. And the club even made Villa bandanas and they sold like mad. And then he got his hair cut and never wore one. I think there's still photos of me lurking around somewhere with my Villa bandana on as a teenager. Look a right muppet. There were some good players, but I think from a technical standpoint, a lot of the players today are better. But to your point, Hannah, I think if they don't win a trophy, that's ultimately the barometer.
What you get remembered by, isn't it? Not like if you can do six and trophies.
You know, people don't look back and think, oh, remember the team that finished fourth 30 years ago? Because that's, you know, that's the way we're tracking at the moment. It's a great team and we've got great memories, but it needs to amount to something.
Yeah. But also, Rob, the current players need to rewrite their own history. In 1982, but we got another European trophy. And those, they can be remembered as legends again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think this season it's as good a chance as we've had since we were in the Conference League 2 years ago, to be honest. I thought we were going to win that, but clearly the players ran out of steam towards the end of that season, and I think that's probably been reflected in the way that we've played over the last couple of seasons. I think Emery's very keen about us still being able to have energy at the end of the season. So hopefully that won't be the case, and we'll put Bologna to bed again. And then we're looking at Forest or Porto then in the semi-finals if we get past Bologna.
Emery is the Europa League specialist.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be.
And he knows how to navigate that competition.
Yeah,
he's got plenty of experience.
Yeah, and yet. I mean, it'd be amazing if you'd have said to me at the start of the season, or even more so, if you'd have said to me halfway through September that come the end of the season, we might be in a position that Liverpool want us to win the Europa League so that they can qualify for the Champions League. You know, you'd have thought we were
two
mad.
Gateways. You've got two gateways.
Yeah, yeah, and hopefully we'll open both.
Top four, and you got Europa, yeah.
Which would be amazing. Have you guys been to any of the European aways at all yet? I've never seen them.
I've interviewed the home ones, not away though.
Yeah,
I've not away made it to either, away game. Unfortunately.
No. Yeah, I've seen other games in Europe. I've just never been fortunate to go and see Villa in Europe. So it would
no,
be.
No, me neither. I'm hoping, I keep looking at flights to Turkey and then I'm chickening out of it.
Yeah, don't want to. Well, for me, it's don't want to tempt fate. I'm not so much worried about having a flight that I don't need. It's more I'd be worried about. Well, if I buy the flight and we don't get there, it's actually going to be my fault.
I have that. So
the big thing is, Rob, we need to handle the pressure because that's the biggest thing. At the big moments, we always seem to feel the pressure. When the pressure's on us, and we're the favourites to win the competition, so we need to handle that pressure.
Absolutely, and I think that's where having the experience around the squad of players like McGinn now compared to 2 years ago, and I think we've seen the influence of him coming back, having somebody like Lindelof in the squad that's won a lot of trophies, you know, as much as some of these guys have been great for us and have taken us to unprecedented heights.
Yep.
Well, certainly within recent memory. For a lot of them, it's the best they've ever done as well. And so it's difficult. You do need players that have been around it. Sancho's played
well, in the Champions League. If you go into the Conference League, and the Champions League, looks at Ezri Konsa, Matikash, Martinez, McGinn.
Yeah,
they've all played at that level, which the experience really helps.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very different when it comes to a final. You know, you guys will know it from the playoffs. I remember it from the two cup finals in the 90s and the ones that we lost since then that I've been at. You know, there's a different feeling in the fans. You wake up in the morning and your stomach's in knots. Yeah. You know, before you even think about leaving the house, you just wake up and it's there straight away. And it'll be the same for a lot of the players. So having the ones that have been around it before will make a difference. And I think we've got more of that now. So they need to bring that confidence and energy to the...
Well, Rob, we'll get a new tattoo. If we win the Europa League, I'm getting a tattoo.
Oh, yeah. What are you going to get?
Unai Emery tattoo.
Whereabouts?
On the chest or something, I think.
Really?
And I'm going to go, if we win the Europa League, so it's still pending at the moment.
Perfect. Yeah, I think I'll get a tattoo of his face on the top of my head. And then when I'm on podcasts like this, I can just put my head down and be like, he's talking. Yeah. I think we'll have to get a trophy.
I got to the 1990s. We had great players there. Dr. Dwight York, Milosevic, was it Mark Bosnich?
Bosnich Ian was great. Taylor. Ian Taylor was great. Andy Townsend was a really good player. You know, I mean, you think at the time that we signed him, he was captain of Chelsea, and that was for a reason. Some of the players that predated that but didn't win trophies. If I go all the way back to the 92-93 season, the first season of the Premier League, that was the football we played that season was incredible. And we had some players that perhaps don't get the recognition. Gary Parker was a really good footballer. Earl Barrett was a really good footballer. You know, we're all familiar with Dino and Dalian and the spectacular goal. Steve Froggatt doesn't get enough of a mention.
Ooh,
he was a good player till he got injured.
You got Alan Wright?
Well, there was Tony Daly was playing, Ray Houghton was involved as well. You know, just really, really good players. It was a good side. And it's easy to look back at that first season of the Premier League and think, I mean, we choked then, really. If we'd have won the Premier League that season, I wonder how different our history would have been. Michael Huggins says in the chat there, we should have won the league, and we should. I remember it. I remember playing Manchester City at home right at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And the away fans had a big banner with them that said, "Good luck, Villa, from the city of Manchester."
Yep. The Brian Little, he built a great side. The talented players, that group he put together. He's talking about that bit of youth and to experience a bit of both.
Yeah, no, it was really good. I think it was unfortunate that across the era of Little and Gregory, we had some great signings or potentially great signings that didn't work out. Collymore, I thought, would have been amazing. Yeah. Obviously, he's got well-documented mental health problems that we weren't aware of at the time. Yeah. I think even if we were, it wouldn't have been handled with the right level of sensitivity. But some of the other signings, Alan Thompson came in from Bolton. Everyone thought he was going to be incredible, wasn't. Sasha Churchic, another one that came in from Bolton, another Serbian. We thought he was going to be great. He ended up going off, basically walked away from football, became a porn star for a little while, and then appeared in Celebrity Big Brother in Serbia. You can check that out on his Wikipedia. Because he was out injured for ages with some kind of undescribed injury, and then he came back with a completely different nose. So he'd obviously had his nose remodeled, and then he left us. I think he went to Palace briefly, and then he ended up having a little bit of a porn career and then a bit of Celebrity Big Brother. So, there was a few of them. Steve Stone.
Well, Rob, I'm going to make you feel old now. I'm 30. So the year that you won something, I was born.
That's frightening, mate. Frightening. But well, it says it all, though, doesn't it? You know, I think there's not just a generation. There's like three or four generations of fans now that haven't seen us win anything or were too young, you know, to really remember it when we did win anything. I was alive in 1982, but I'm too young to even know what football was really at that time. And it's a shame. I think when you're so close to almost having experienced it, you know, and it is, there's nothing like it, not just the game, but the first home game afterwards when they, when they come round with a trophy, which I guess if it was the Europa League or the FA Cup, I don't know if we'd get that experience. Whereas if you win the League Cup, then obviously it's early enough in the season that there's a home match coming and they get to walk the trophy around the pitch. And yeah, it does. It feels amazing. It is a very, very different experience. And
Rob, did you have any favourite players growing up? Who was your favourite?
David Platt was my favourite. When I first started going to Villa, it was David Platt. Played number 8 for us. And my first ever Villa kit was when I was about 9 and I had the Hummel home shirt. And I drew a number 8 on the back with a marker pen. Because at that time you couldn't go to the shop and get a number put on the back of it, so I drew it on with a marker pen, which was, you know, probably the start of my kit design career. To be honest, was drawing that on. But yeah, he was great. And then I just kind of had a thing for number 8s after that. So my next favourite was Gary Parker, even though I loved the strikers and I loved York and Dalian and Dino. I just loved those number 8s. Those kind of midfielders that were pulling the strings and scoring goals.
Another good year in tournaments.
Exactly. So it's probably been quite a good number for it. Didn't we? Mark Draper was number 8 for a while as well. You know, we've done all right. There'll probably be people showing up in the comments with all the rubbish number 8s that we've had over the years as well. Can't remember what number Gavin McCann had. But
definitely some rubbish ones.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But now, I think over the years, we have had some really good number 8s, but yeah, it's easy for me now to look back and be like, oh, the 90s was the golden era. It was great. But we did have some really good players, and it shows by how high we were finishing in the league and the fact that we won 2 trophies.
Doesn't he get 82 before that?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say before my time. Kind of unfortunately, but also fortunately, because it would mean that I was even older if I remembered 1982. But yeah, it was perfect for me as well, though, those 2 cup wins, because I was 15 and 17 for the two wins. So, you know, the second one, I was like having a drink at Wembley and thought I was, shut up, Buster. I'm sure you can hear him.
Yeah.
It's like if you're on a business call with me, I'll be sitting here trying to, you know, convince people to take on the latest designs, and like, I'm even boring my dog to tears. Yes, and I was dead lucky that being a teenager, it was like prime time to be able to enjoy it and go to school boasting about it as well. So, yeah, I just hope come the end of this season we have got a trophy to show for it, because I think particularly the players you mentioned that have been there a while, you know, look at Mings, Abraham coming back, McGinn, some of the ones that were around in the championship or not.
We've got to make the most of Unai Emery. It'd be great for him to get a trophy with Aston Villa. Because 3 years he's worked really hard.
Yeah.
He's transformed the football club. And for him, not me, everything to him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I need to head off in a minute and put the kids to bed. Okay. But I'll ask you guys one last question.
Okay.
If Unai Emery was to get us into the Champions League again this season through the league, and again the following season through the league, and then leaves, so he's done 5 years, but we don't win a trophy, is that statue material or is there no statue? Because people say build the statue. I know it's tongue in cheek, but what's
maybe not statue. Yeah, I would say if in the Champions League, he wouldn't deserve a statue. I don't think. We need to get a trophy to get that status.
Yeah.
I agree. I think those kind of, putting things in waxwork or in stone have to come from some kind of, tangible achievement. And no doubt Unai Emery will go down as one of the best we've ever had, even if he left this season.
Oh, agree.
To have him his name up in lights somewhere or whatever. Yeah, we need that silverware. It needs to happen, doesn't it? And I also think that's the mark of real success. Like, as much as we feel dizzy at finishing top four, ultimately that should, if we want to be a big club, that should be what becomes our norm. So we do need that next step, which is going to be adding something to the trophy cabinet, finally.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rob. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you. Pleasure to come on. Sorry it's been difficult to arrange over the last few weeks.
That's okay.
But today it's been my little boy's birthday today. Speaking of number eight, it's his birthday today. So it gives me a chance to duck out after the party and avoid the tidying up. It's like I've got to go to Dad's podcast and talk to Hannah.
Also, next season, the new kit. Get your assume up the new kit design.
Yeah, no, I've not had any sneak peeks of it. But yeah, I think as soon as we do get confirmation of the new kit in the summer, I'd love to come on and talk to you guys about
it. Give you an exclusive,
we'll see what we can come up with. Ryan, guys, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.
See you
later.
Bye.
See you later. We'll get my next guest on now. So we've got Callum on the line. Hi, Callum. How are you?
Hi.
Pleased to speak to you again.
Yeah, hopefully no internet problems now. I'm back in the UK, so.
Well, so Callum, I'm going to ask you the next question. We're going to talk about our remaining fixtures. So what do you expect? For the final running, I'm going to get it on the screen, the fixtures, so everyone can see this graphic. So what do you think, Callum?
I can't see them at the moment.
Can you see it on the screen?
On the screen.
I can see it. Might be if you're using mobile rather than...
We'll just read it to you, Callum. We'll read you.
Okay.
It's what you expect. Let's bring Elsie Bill on your way.
Right.
Then we also play Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where we're on the Premier League guy. Then the home leg against Bologna.
Uh-huh.
So first, we'll get on with those guys first.
Okay. I think we'll get somewhere on the first leg, especially against Bologna, with it being a team we've already played.
If you win the first leg, we've got a chance.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough one, obviously, but I'm just a bit happy that we don't have to face Roma, and with what happened with Asensio at PSG, the same thing might happen with Marlin, and this time we might actually score, which is a good thing. So it's a good thing that
we've beaten them before, because we've beaten them in the Champions League and the Europa League before. We know what they're all about.
Yeah, two years in a row, isn't it? And we've beaten them twice. So I'm hoping that we can get to the semis. Just depends if we get Forest or Porto, doesn't it?
Wilson Callum, at least. Even Dunja Mona won't come back and haunt us.
Yeah, that's why I was delighted.
Also, after that, then we got Sunderland. At home, we got Fulham away. If we do get through the semis, we've got Porto and Nottingham Forest.
Right.
All but both of them sides. Then we've got Tottenham at home. We should work the floor with Tottenham.
Ah.
I think we should be looking to win that one. The Porto and Forest again. Then you got Burnley away. Then the Liverpool's the last home game. And also then you got Istanbul, the final. Fingers crossed we get there.
Yeah, I was at the semi-final against Olympiacos in Greece, and that wasn't very good. So
then we got Man City away.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have...
if you don't come down, I don't think hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. The Sunderland game might be a banana skin type of match, I think. Burnley, we should win, but we do struggle against nearly promoted sides, and especially rubbish ones like Wolves. So I'm very worried, especially
yeah.
with the fact that we haven't played Burnley in a long time away from home. So that's probably going to be another banana skin, but I'm hoping to win that one.
Spurs... Well, Callum, how many wins do you think we need
to secure
Champions League?
To secure Champions League, I think we're 5 points ahead of... Is it Liverpool, I think?
Yeah, Liverpool, 6 points,
ahead of... Okay, right. I think 9 points, so 3 wins.
Yep.
So I think out of that lot, which personally I think is very doable. I think out of that list, the Forest away is probably the one that would be the most tricky, minus obviously
44 lives.
We don't like going to the city ground, but I totally expect us to be beating Sunderland, Fulham and Burnley, and I actually think we should be beating Spurs as well. I'm feeling really confident actually at the minute, so maybe I'm just getting ahead of myself.
I did say that at 1 point, behind Man United, so even United, it's not impossible that we can catch them.
A lot of the teams around us play each other or have more difficult fixtures as well, so. United have got to play their local rivals Leeds. I'm pretty sure they play Liverpool, and I'm pretty sure they play Chelsea as well. And Chelsea have difficult fixtures. So I think ultimately it's ours to lose, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And the likes of that, we've got John McGinn, Yuri Tiedemann's back. The third one are in a better place now. Or not better place than where we were a few weeks ago.
Definitely.
Yeah. Do you want to the next talking point then? So we're going to talk about Lindelof and Ross Barkley. So do you think the likes of Ross Barkley and Lindelof should be getting more minutes? I'll ask you, Hannah.
I really, really have been surprised by Lindelof this season. I put a tweet out the other week whenever he played, it must have been against Lille, that I actually think he's our signing of the season, which probably isn't saying loads considering the recruitment, what hasn't been the best, but he's really surprised me. He obviously had a pretty good career at Man United. Like, you don't play there for the length that he did without being a good footballer. But he's just been so solid when he's come in. I think our win rate when he started has actually been really good as well. Yeah. Obviously, it's a smaller sample size, but I think he should get more minutes, whether it's in the league or if we just give him the shirt for the remaining Europa. Like,
well, Lindelof, every time he's played the Villa shirt, he's been really solid. And also, Emery likes him earlier, but he's versatile. And he's an experienced defender, but that reads the game really well.
Yeah, Emery likes a player that he can sort of swap and interchange. Like, it's good that he can cover the covering defensive midfield position if we need it. I think he's even dropped in at right back once or twice. So that's the exact kind of player that Emery likes. And honestly, I'd be looking to see if we can keep him. I'm pretty sure he was a loan, unless I've misremembered.
Free transfer, was it?
Oh, was he a free transfer? So he's our player then. August was a long time ago, Chad. Do not remember. So yeah, I'm very happy for him to stay at Villa. Like, I thought at the start of the season, he'd be one of those that, a bit like a De Sassi type, that he's third, fourth choice and comes in when someone gets injured. But I think he absolutely can be more than that at Villa at the minute.
Look at Man United. He was a real regular there for some time. And you know, the Europa League games, he's sort of been utilised a lot in that competition. And also, his physicality. He's a non-nonsense defender. But, and he's good at his height.
Yeah, he's an all-rounder, I think. And like I say, I think he's paired really well with Konsa. And I think the last game, did he play with Pau Torres as well? So he's adaptable. So he's exactly what we need, especially this time of the season where you might pick up, you know, the odd extra injury from fatigue.
He plays at right back sometimes.
Yeah, very versatile player.
And also, Hannah, I was going to ask you, what do you make of Ross Barkley, Hannah? Do you think he should be getting more minutes? What's your opinion about him?
I thought he had a really solid game, actually, when he started against West Ham. One thing I did think was that he actually worked better alongside Onana than Douglas Luiz does. I don't know if Luiz and Onana are both a little bit too similar, don't particularly bring out the best in each other. I thought Barkley actually was a little bit more positive in terms of moving the ball forward. I think Barkley is one of those where he can make a few mistakes, but again, a bit like McGinn, he really does work hard. I remember against West Ham, I think he lost the ball either in the midfield or just about in our half, and he then busted a gut to get back, and I think he won a goal kick in the end.
He really draws forward, Ross Barkley. Gets the team all at the pitch. He does do that a lot as well.
Yeah, he's positive. He wants to get the ball forward, and I think that's what we've lacked a little bit.
He's doing rips.
Yeah, I really like Douglas Luiz, don't get me wrong, but I think he's a little bit more of a safe player these days, whereas Barkley, I think, has shown a little bit more of a desire to attack.
Yeah. And Conor, I'll bring you into it, Conor. Do you think Victor Lindelof and Ross Barkley should be getting more minutes?
I think so, yeah. Especially in the Lille game, I could not believe how good the team was, by the way. The team was so good. And also with 2 weeks previously with Unai and the stubbornness, I couldn't believe he actually changed his ways for the last game previously against Lille. So it was really exciting to see Lindelof on the pitch, and I really am a big fan of his, and I think we were all against the side when he first came. But
every time he's playing well, I think.
Yeah.
I've been impressed with him. Also, Ross Barkley. He's got an experienced hand, I think he has. And I do like Ross Barkley. He always changes the temper. In that midfield, you know, he can dictate the game.
Right.
Are you a Ross Barkley fan?
At the moment, yeah. Because he offers something different. And I think with Douglas Luiz, I don't think he's been the same player as what we used to have, but he was there for availability reasons rather than the reasons why Ross Barkley's in the team to just be an all-round midfielder, because he has played everywhere in the midfield. Yeah. He's played CDM, CAM, centre-mid, so it's good to have him, especially with him popping up with important goals, especially in the last few weeks.
Does Unai Emery remind me? He hasn't been given many minutes, also because of injuries. It's not like managing his minutes, Ross Barkley. As long as he manages his minutes, I think.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be a 38 to 45 game a season player. But, you know, he's at the stage of his career where I don't think he needs to be. He's probably been brought in to be that useful sort of option to rotate in and out. And at the minute, since he's returned to fitness and got his way into the team, that's exactly what he's doing.
He's a useful player to utilise in your squad. Looks like you can bring on another option. He shows actually our squad depth. Look, our squad depth, you know, is a lot better than previous seasons.
When everyone's fit, yeah.
We don't have much luck with injuries. Apart from Kamara, we've got McGinn and Tiernemans. So I'm pleased about that. The thing is, some people saying about the excuses, but the thing is, the midfield is a key part of our team.
Absolutely. It's the heart of the team.
Oh, yes, heart of the team, yeah. Another way, and also in a double pivot, you can use like Tiernemans. You haven't got Kamara, you have got Ossie Onana. As you also say, actually, last game, Onana, he was brilliant.
Yeah. One of our best players on that day.
Yeah. He gets stuck in and he makes powerful runs. Foreman, he's a real machine, I think, Onana.
When he plays at his best, he is a real force.
He's really more consistent.
Yeah, he's a very physical player. Can really get across the pitch at some speed with how long his legs are. And, you know, his best attribute is his slide tackling, isn't it? There's not many that do it like that anymore. And then it's again, we're talking about players that are unique in this team and have different qualities. Onana has that as well. So, he's really stepped up for us, hasn't he, with the absence of three of our other main midfielders. So we've just got to sort of wrap him in bubble wrap for the rest of the season now and hope that we're not getting him too fatigued.
We're going towards the end of the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for getting involved. Thank you, Hannah. And thank you, Callum, as well.
Nice one.
Thanks for having us, Chad.
It's been a pleasure.
Oh, Harvey, you're always doing great things to do the work that you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone, for watching. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe. Make sure to smash the like button on the way out of this stream. Give it a share on all your socials, and if you're listening to my audio, leave us a good review. That always helps. also let me know your thoughts in the comment section. Everyone enjoy the international break. I'm going to wrap up this episode with Villa Forever, as always, and up the Villa.